Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is March 13, 2017, or it's Vidar 15, 2020. We will show the first service today with a song entitled, Yahshua Took My Burden. I, a poor lost sinner, before the Yah did fall, and in the name of Yahshua, for pardon I did call. He heard my supplication, and soon the weak were strong. For Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song. Yes, Yahshua took my burden I could no longer bear. Yes, Yahshua took my burden in answer to my prayer. My anxious fear subsided, my spirit, it was strong. For Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song. Oftentimes the way is dreary and rugged seems the road. Oftentimes I'm weak and weary when I'm bent beneath some load. But when I cry in weakness, how long, O Yah, how long? Indeed, Yahshua takes the burden and leaves me with a song. Yes, Yahshua took my burden I could no longer bear. Yes, Yahshua took my burden and answer to my prayer. My anxious fear subsided, my spirit was made strong. For Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song. When I was crushed with sorrow, I bowed in deep despair. My load of grief and heartache seemed more than I could bear. Just then I heard a whisper, you to the Yah belong. Then Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song. Yes, Yahshua took my burden I could no longer bear. Yes, Yahshua took my burden in answer to my prayer. My anxious fear subsided, my spirit was made strong. For Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song. I'll trust Him for the future, He knoweth all the way. For with His eye He'll guide me a long last pilgrim way. And I will tell in heaven, while ages roll as long, how Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song. Yes, Yahshua took my burden I could no longer bear. Yes, Yahshua took my burden and answered to my prayer. My anxious fear subsided, my spirit was made strong. For Yahshua took my burden and left me with a song.
Idolatry, Part 8.
We're on our continuation from our last study. We're dealing with the subject of birthdays from fossilized customs by Lou White. The popular celebration of one's birthday is acknowledged to be by all authorities on the ancient custom, a pagan ritual from Babylon. The Babylonians served the sun, moon, planets, and constellations, a Gentile practice condemned by Yahweh. Jeremiah 10:2. Thus saith Yahweh, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. For the heathen are dismayed at them. Birthdays are mentioned in the Tanakh scriptures a total of three times. Number one, when Joseph was in prison in Egypt, Genesis 40:20. And number two, Job 1:4-5. And number three, Herod's birthday, when John and the Baptist was beheaded, Matthew 14:6. In the situation described in Job, he sacrificed an animal because he was aware of his children's idolatry, for which they all died when the house they celebrated in collapsed on them in a violent windstorm. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day. The baker was hanged on the Pharaoh's birthday, and the Savior's cousin John was beheaded on the king's birthday. The birthday ritual, the ritual of the cake, candle, wish, and presents served to give thanks to the sky luminaries for allowing the birthday celebrant to reach the annual cycle of their birth. The cake was baked for the Queen of Heaven. It was decorated and monogrammed with the celebrant's name. The candles symbolized the sacred fire, carefully numbered for each annual cycle completed. The prayer chant and all the ritual procedures are carefully preserved, and it is a religious occasion. Witches regard the day of one's birth the most significant event. One, a person's life. Astrologers base everything on it. Let's read that last sentence again. It says, witches regard the day of one's birth the most significant event in a person's life. Astrologers base everything on it. If the celebrant can blow out all of the candles, then a secret wish made to a genie or Juno, if the person is female, will be granted. The birthday itself was a time of the great superstition unto a pagan, so they were surrounded by their friends and relatives for protection. In the Greek culture, it was believed that the personal abilities and talents were bestowed on an individual by being inhabited, possessed by one or more demons, called muses. A Persian genius was the gift of the genie, thought of as the overseer of the muses. The muses were nine female deities believed to endow skills in speech, art, science, memory, scholastics, agility, and music. A word derived from the muses, nine daughters of Zeus, and Mnemosyne. The names of these nine muses were Chilo, Euterpe, Talia, Melpomene, Tersichore, Ereto, Palmania, Urania, and Calliope. You may recognize some of these names as having become part of our language, like Uranus, They are the Greek deities of the arts and sciences, giving us the word museum, a showplace of art and science. The fairy tale of the Sleeping Beauty directly refers to the gifts and benefits bestowed on the Muses, since the Muses were known as fairies in Germanic and Gaelic cultures. The three fairies were a triad of female deities, also known as the three graces or the three charities. In the Greek and Roman mythologies, they rule the lives of men and determine the length of a person's life. Clotho spun the thread of life. Lachesis determined its length, and Atropos cut. Okay. End of chapter 10. Chapter 11. Sports, games, and their influence on the Christian life. Now, what, if any, value is sports and games to a genuine Christian, or organized competitive sports a proper form of entertainment, recreation, or livelihood? What about the winning attitude so much demanded by coaches? Is it really a sinning attitude? Where did spectator sports and games originate? What should a Christian do about them? The Tyndale Bible Encyclopedia admits that in ancient Israel, the Hebrews had little time or inclination for the physical sports. Sports so highly touted in the world today is nowhere mentioned in either the Old or the New Testament of the Bible as a truly desirable form of activity for the Yahweh's Elohim's people, believe it or not. Search high and low in the Bible and you will find very little that could be interpreted as Yahweh's recommendation or approval of the sports and athletic contest. There is no indication that sports were practiced by Abraham or his son, the patriarchs. There is no indication in the scriptures that Yeshua, the Messiah, our example and elder brother, ever participated in the organized sports and games, or such contests as boxing, ball games, track and field events, or the like. Let us face it, has sports been for far too highly touted in the modern times and credited with the things they can never achieve? If sports are really so valuable in forming true Christian character, then why is the Bible solid about them? Why did Yeshua never mention them? Have you ever wondered about that? What does Yahweh's Elohim's word say about physical sports and their proper place in life? Notice this shocking fact. When introduced by the Hellenizing Jews in the time of the Antiochus Epiphanes and patronized by Jason the high priest, the Greek love of sport was considered irreligious. Volume 1, page 541. The Jewish historian Josephus, who lived during the first century after Messiah, gives us more insight into what was occurring in Israel during the time of Antiochus Epiphanes. Josephus writes, Menelaus and the sons of Tobias were distressed and retired to Antiochus and informed him that they were desirous to leave the laws of their country and the Jewish way of living according unto them, and to follow the king's laws. And the Grecian way of living, wherefore they desired his permission to build them a gymnasium at Jerusalem.
To live the Jewish way of living.
These Jewish apostates were forsaking the truth and laws of the Yahweh Elohim. They were embracing paganism wholeheartedly. They eagerly desired to follow the customs of the Greeks with their emphasis on athletics and their virtual worship of the body. Beautiful. They were apostatizing from the revealed truth of Yahweh Elohim and jettisoning the laws of Yahweh in order that they might be respected and accepted by their pagan Gentile neighbors. Accordingly, they even tried to hide the fact that they were circumcised. These Jewish renegades from the truth of Yahweh Elohim endeavored to appear uncircumcised when they performed in a Greek athletic contest by means of a surgical operation. The laws of Yahweh Elohim had become an embarrassment to them. But this was just the beginning. The introduction, as it were, soon the ways of the Gentiles were replacing Yahweh Elohim's truth at every level of the society. Antiochus Epiphanes, once he had made these inroads among the more liberal elements of the Jews, began to repeal all the Mosaic law and simply replaced him with the Grecian law. And customs, he banned the law of Moses, and all the holy books were burned that he could find. He abolished the temple sacrifices and even installed a statue in the temple of Elohim dedicated to Zeus, Yahweh. The temple was profaned, swine was sacrificed on the altar, and all copies of the Jewish scriptures were ordered to be destroyed. Circumcision was forbidden. Yahweh's dietary laws were abolished. And any who were found clinging to the laws of Yahweh Elohim and obeying him were executed. Many gave their lives in martyrdom rather than compromise with the laws of Yahweh and their holy faith. But notice, all these diabolical satanic schemes began ever so innocently, at least on the surface appearance. At first, it was merely a matter of athletics. Sports as a paid profession were unknown among the people of Yahweh Elohim. Even amateur athletics on a grand scale with huge arenas were foreign to the way of the life of the ancient people of Yahweh. Such contests were introduced into ancient Israel by the Greeks after the conquest of Palestine by Alexander the Great and subsequent by the Antiochus Epiphanes and later by the Romans. But the real advent of the public games and spectator sports in Israel first began during the days of the Antiochus Epiphanes, approximately 169 years before the Messiah. For we read in the book of book 1 of Maccabees, there sprang from them a sinful shoot named Antiochus Epiphanes, the son of King Antiochus. He had been a hostage in Rome, and he became king in the 137th year of the Greek kingdom. In those days, there arose out of Israel lawless men who persuaded many, saying, "Let us go and make a treaty with the heathen around us, for ever since the time we became separated from them, many misfortunes have overtaken us." The plan seemed good in their eyes, and some of the people went eagerly to the king, and he authorized them to introduce the practices of the heathen, and they built a gymnasium in Jerusalem in the heathen fashion and submitted to the uncircumcision and disowned the holy agreement. They allied themselves with the heathen and became the slaves of wrongdoing. Number 1 Maccabees 1:10-15. Notice among the practices of the heathen were spectator sports events held in huge edifices called arenas or gymnasium. The word gymnasium itself is very interesting. The World Book Encyclopedia points out the word gymnasium comes from a Greek word meaning to exercise naked. In ancient Greece, the word was used to mean public places set aside for athletic sports. Greek boys and young men wore no clothes when taking part in games in order to have freedom of the bodily movement. Isaac Asimov, in his Guide to the Bible, relates that Alexander the Great, in the conquering of the Persian Empire, did more than merely make himself king over vast tracts of land. He introduced Greek culture to the East. This culture has always been a very attractive one, and it was widely adopted. All of Asia Minor became Greek in culture, if not in race. The Jews were not immune to the attractiveness of the Greek culture, any more than they were immune to the Canaanite culture in the days of the judges and the kings, or to American culture today. In the time of the Seleucids, there were many among them who wanted to assimilate and to establish gymnasia after the Greek fashion. That's page 49 of volume 2. At the gymnasia, the Greeks were accustomed to exercise in the nude. This in itself was horrifying to those Jews who clung to the old ways, writes Asimov. Worse still, Jews who exercised in the nude could clearly be seen to be circumcised. To avoid this embarrassment, the custom arose of wearing the false foreskins, thus making them uncircumcised. Thus Antiochus Epiphanes did all in his power to Hellenize the Jews and to spread Greek culture in Israel. The Seleucid rulers, like all the Macedonian rulers, were seriously intent on spreading Greek culture everywhere they went, since they felt it was superior by far unto all other cultures. But what does Yahweh Elohim say in his holy word about adopting the ways and practices and customs of the heathen? Yahweh Elohim told Israel in the days of Moses, through whom he gave his law, when the Yahweh, thy Elohim shall cut off the nations from before thee, where thou goest to possess them, and thou succeedest them, and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself, that thou be not snared by the following them, after they are destroyed from before thee, and that thou inquire not after God, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so I will do likewise. Jeremiah 10:1-3. Hear ye the word which Yahweh speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Verse 2. Thus saith Yahweh, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. Number 3. For the customs of the people are vain. Thou shalt not do so unto the Yahweh thy Elohim, for every abomination unto Yahweh that he hateth have they done unto their gods. Deuteronomy 12:29-31. But surely some will scoff. Athletics is just athletics sports. It was not done in honor of any pagan deity or idol of God. So what's wrong with it? What are the facts? One of the most common sins is that people assume something to be true when it isn't. They merely assume. Then they proceed according unto their own human reason and do what is right in their own eyes. Yahweh Elohim said through Moses, "You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day. Every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes." Deuteronomy 12:8. As true Christians, we are commanded to live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Yahweh. Matthew 4:4. What then is the origin of the spectator sports, team athletics performed in huge arenas and stadiums? Is it a right custom which Yahweh Elohim introduced to his people in Israel? The truth may shock and surprise you. The origin of human athletic contest is not so innocent as the devil would have you believe. The shocking origin of competitive sports. Now, I have already shown that there is nothing in the Bible to condemn such personal sports as hunting, fishing, canoeing, running, wrestling, archery, or merely fun games where boys and girls, men and women, choose up teams and play some game for the fun of it and for the fellowship and exercise. But notice carefully, I said, for the fun of it, not to strive to show oneself the best or the winner, or better than somebody else. That is distinctly not Yahweh's way. Yahweh intended sports and athletics merely to serve as a means to discipline, tone up, and strengthen the body, so that it may serve us better. He never intended sports to become an end in itself, or for professional sports to become a modern-day idol or form of idolatry. How many more people cheer at some football game on Saturday or Sunday than go to church to hear the word of Yahweh Elohim preached? For the Yahweh never intended young people to become so serious about a mere game that they struggle and strive and fight in order to beat some other team or individual. What the world calls combative sports, which can include any sport where you have a human opponent, seems to be to very quickly get out of hand, leading to wrong attitudes. Pride and feelings of animosity, hard feelings, intense dislike, because people take such games far too seriously. Riots and murders have occurred at the sites of professional sports, particularly soccer or football games in Europe or South America. In ancient times, in Central America, the Mayans held ball games, a vigorous athletic contest where the team that lost the game were all put to death. They literally played for their life. But before we discuss the origin of athletic contests and spectator sports as such, notice a revealing account of the introduction of the pagan Greek athletic contest during the time of Antiochus Maccabees. This account is from our witness sources and is known as 2 Maccabees, the author relates. But when Seleucus departed this life in Antiochus, Antiochus, who was called Epiphanes, succeeded to the kingdom. Onias, brother Jason, obtained the high priesthood by the corruption, promising the king in his petition 360 talents of silver and 80 talents from other revenues. Besides this, he promised to pay 150 more if he was given authority to set up a gymnasium and a training place for youth there and to enroll the people of Jerusalem as citizens of Antioch. When the king had consented and he had taken office, he immediately brought his countrymen over to the Greek way of living. He set aside the royal ordinances, especially favoring the Jews, and abrogating the lawful way of living, he introduced new customs contrary to the law. For he willingly established a gymnasium right under the citadel, and he made the finest of the young men wear the Greek hat, and to such pitch did the cultivation of the Greek fashions and the coming in of the foreign customs rise, because of the excessive wickedness of this wicked Jason, who was no high priest at all, but the priests were no longer earnest about the service of the altar, but disdaining the sanctuary and neglecting the sacrifices, they hurried to take part in the unlawful exercises in the wrestling school. After the summons to the discus throwing, regarding as worthless the things their forefathers valued, and thinking Greek standards the finest. This eyewitness account of the invasion of the ancient Judah by the pagan customs, including the Greek games as they were called, is found in the book of the 2 Maccabees 4:17. Notice that these useless, foolish games and contests included such things as discus throwing and wrestling bouts. Other games included chariot races and even gladiatorial bouts. The Roman Colosseum was to become famous the world over as a site for cruel and wicked games to entertain the masses. Some of these games later included feeding Christians to wild beasts and lions. But now, what of their origin? Where did spectators' sports contests begin? Notice the astounding truth. The World Book Encyclopedia says, early societies used sports to train people for survival and for war. Then, as people learned to live together more peaceably, sports festivals developed. The first recorded Olympic Games took place in Greece in 776 B.C. This same authority declares athletics played an important part in the religious festival of the ancient Greeks. But people believed such competition pleased the spirits of the dead. The religious festivals honored the gods, and many Greek tribes and cities held one every 4 years. These festivals probably began about before 1400 B.C. In time for national festivals developed. The Isthmian, the Nemean, Olympic, and the Pythian Games. The Olympic Games, which ranked as the most important, honored Zeus, the king of gods. Olympic Games, volume 14, page 570. Thus, the pagan nature and origin of the international sports festivals such as the Olympic Games is plainly revealed and is thoroughly documented. Any encyclopedia will tell you the same thing. Such sports festivals are pagan. They were originally created to honor pagan gods and were an important part of the pagan religious exercises to honor their gods. What does Yahweh Elohim say about his people allowing themselves to become part of this world's pagan religious festivals, which have their pagan origin written right in their foreheads? What does Yahweh Elohim say about such competitive sports and athletic contests witnessed by the millions? Oh, of course it can be exciting, swelling and causes one blood to race, but are they of any value? Do you really train young men to become better men? Do they really develop righteous, holy character? For the Apostle Paul knew better. He was inspired by Yahweh, telling him to write very plainly for all to see, but refused profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto righteousness. For bodily exercise profiteth little, but righteousness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is, and of that which is to come. 1 Timothy 4:7-8. Notice how the Apostle Paul put down the exaggerated emphasis on sports and athletics under the Yahweh's divine inspiration. He wrote that bodily exercise is of little value, of little worth. It does not build righteous or holy character. All too often it does the exact opposite, teaching young men combative instincts and developing a competitive spirit, just like the diabolical spirit and attitude of Satan the devil. Do you see and comprehend the danger? Little by little, Satan attempts to make inroads to subvert Yahweh's Elohim's people. He begins with what seems like a little thing, something which looks innoxious of itself, such as a concept of sports or athletic, but then it becomes overemphasized, exaggerated in importance. A competitive spirit is nurtured and encouraged and fed, a spirit of fierce aggressiveness within the laws of the game, of course, a spirit of reckless abandon to win, a spirit of win at all costs. This attitude is taught to small children playing baseball, soccer, and basketball. Cheerleaders only cheer for their own team, and in high school sports contests, the attitude is all too often reflected in the cheers. Stomp 'em, beat 'em, thrash 'em, murder 'em. It is the exact same spirit as that of Satan the devil. The spirit of competition is wrong. It is evilish. The plain truth is that character is not built by playing sports or football or basketball. Simply put, character is built by overcoming obstacles, overcoming human nature. Discipline your mind and body. It was the fighting against self, against temptation, to let up, to give up, to quit when things got tough. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. 1 Corinthians 9:24-27. Some people think a little compromise is all right. A little sin is okay. They seem to have the attitude of Naaman, the Syrian general who was cleansed by the Elisha, the prophet of the Yahweh, of his leprosy, by the bathing 7 times in the Jordan River. Upon acknowledging the miracle performed by the Elohim of Israel, nevertheless Naaman said to the prophet, "For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offerings nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Yahweh. And this saying that Yahweh pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Ramon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Ramon, when I bow down myself in the house of Ramon, the Yahweh pardon thy servant in this thing." 2 Kings 5:17-18. Yahweh doesn't want partial love or obedience. He wants our wholehearted obedience and worship and love. He wants our worship unmixed and undiluted and unadulterated with the heathen pagan customs and practices. Yahweh said, "You shall therefore keep all my statutes and all mine ordinances, to do them, that the land whither I bring you to dwell therein spew you not out, and you shall not walk in the manners of the nations which I cast out before you, for they committed all of these things, and therefore I abhorred them. But I have said unto you, you shall inherit their land, and I will give it unto you to possess it, a land that flows of milk and honey. I am the Yahweh your Elohim, who has separated you from other people. You shall therefore put difference between clean beasts and unclean, and between unclean fowls and clean, and you shall not make yourselves abominable by beast, or by fowl, or by any manner of living thing that creepeth on the ground, which I have separated from you as unclean. He shall be holy unto me, for I, Yahweh, am holy, and have separated you from other people, that you should be mine. Leviticus 20:22-26. Wherefore come out from among them, and be you separate, saith the Yahweh, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. 2 Corinthians 6:14-17. Sports contests today do not honor Yahweh Elohim. They are a distraction of the world away from the things of Yahweh Elohim. The International Olympic Games are not held in honor of Yahweh, but derived from the ancient paganism. Yahweh says, now therefore hearken, O Israel, unto the statutes and unto the ordinances which I teach you, to do them, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Yahweh Elohim of your fathers giveth you. Ye shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish anything from it, that ye may keep the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim which I command you. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nation, who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. Deuteronomy 4:16. Yahweh Elohim Almighty, our Heavenly Father, says in answer unto these direct questions, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18:4. This article is taken from the Hope of Israel's Ministry. End of chapter 11. Let's continue now in chapter 12. True origin of Christian fish symbol might outrage and shock Yahshua worshippers. Modern day Christians claim that their fish logo, the Iticus, dates back to the earthly days of the faith. But this symbol is much older and has pagan origins rooted in the fertility and earth goddess worship. Web post, March 26, 1999. For many pop culture Christians, the fish decal on the back car bumper or attached to a keychain or door is a symbol of their religion and a feel-good statement about Yahshua Messiah. Early Christians used the fish as a recognition sign of their religion. It is also identified as the Ichthus, I-C-H-T-H-U-S, an acronym from the Greek Lysos, Christos, Theos, Euos, Soter, or Yahshua's Messiah, the Son of Elohim, Savior. Oxford English Dictionary, CE, defines ichthyic as a pertaining to or characteristic of fishes, the fish world and all its orders. But contemporary Yahshua worshippers might be surprised, even outraged, to learn that one of their preeminent religious symbols antedated the Christian religion and has its roots in the pagan fertility, awareness, and sexuality. Barbara G. Walker writes in the Woman's Dictionary of Symbols and Sacred Objects that the acronym pertaining unto Yahshua Messiah was a rationale invented after the fact. Christians simply copied this pagan symbol along with many others. Ishtikas was the offspring son of the ancient sea goddess, Targatus, and was known in various mystic systems as Turgata, Aphrodite, Pelagia, or Delphine. The word also meant womb and dolphin in some tongues, and representations of this appeared in the depiction of the mermaid, the fish, also a central element in other stories, including the goddess of Ephesus, who has a fish amulet covering her genital region, as well as a tale of the fish that swallowed the penis of Orsisus, and was also considered a symbol of the vulva of Issus. Along with being a generative and reproductive spirit in mythology, the fish also has been identified in certain cultures with reincarnation and the life force. Sir James George Frazer noted in his work, Adonis Atis Orsisus, Studies in the History of the Oriental Religion, Part 4 of his larger work, The Golden Bough, that among one group in India, the fish was believed to house a deceased soul, and that as part of a fertility ritual, specific fish is eaten in the belief that it will be reincarnated in a newborn child. Well before Christianity, the fish symbol was known as the Great Mother, a pointed oval sign, the visca, a Pisces, or vessel of the fish. Fish and womb were synonymous terms in ancient Greek. Delphos, it links to fertility, birth, feminine, sexuality, and the natural force of women was acknowledged also by the Celts as well as pagan cultures throughout Northern Europe. Eleanor Gaddon traces a fish cult mother as far back as the hunting and fishing people of the Danube River Basin in the 6th millennium BCE. Over 50 shrines have been found throughout the region which depict a fish-like deity, a female creature who incorporates aspects of an egg, a fish, and a woman, which could have been a primeval creator or a mythical ancestress. The great goddess was portrayed elsewhere with the pendulous breast, accentuated buttocks, and a capricious vaginal orifice, the upright vesica of Pisces, which Christians later adopted and rotated 90 degrees to serve as their symbol, along with the fish, used as a code sign for early Christian communities. The Ithacus also found its way into the ritual and decor of church rites. One case in point is the church mitre worn by prelates. Where did this originate? Dr. Thomas Enman discussed this phenomenon in his two-volume opus. Ancient Faith Embodied in the Ancient Names, 1869, he included a representation of a sculpture from Mesopotamia, observing it is the impression of an ancient gem and represents a man clothed with a fish, the head being the mitre, priests thus clothed, often bearing in their hand the mystic bag. In almost every instance, added Amun, or Inman, it will be recognized that the fish head is represented as of the same form as a modern vicious matter. The fish also appears in another sacred iconograph, the avatars and Vishnu, where the deity is represented as emerging from the mouth of a fish, and being a fish himself, the legend being that he was to be the savior of the world in a deluge which was to follow. From his focus of the worshiping a god-man born of a virgin to the selection of holidays and symbols, Christianity appropriated the metaphors of earlier pagan religions, grafting them into its own account of the creation and beyond. Few Yahshua worshippers are aware of this. Even fewer know that when they flaunt the Ithacus or the Ichthys on a t-shirt, car bumper, or even the door of a state legislative office as a representation which originated in Christianity, they are in fact displaying a more ancient symbol indicative of the female anatomy and reproductive potency, the very sign of the Great Mother. For the following article is with the true origin of the Halloween and of the New Year, for the New Year is with the understanding of the celebration of the Halloween. End of chapter 12. Chapter 13. Real origin of Halloween. Do you know that Halloween was introduced into the professing Christian world centuries after the death of the apostles, yet it was celebrated by the pagan centuries before the New Testament church was founded? How did Halloween come to America? Here is the intriguing answer from history. The American celebration rests upon Scottish and Irish folk customs, which can be traced in direct line from pre-Christian times, from paganism. Although Halloween has become a night of rollicking fun, superstitious spells, and eerie games, which people take only half seriously, its beginnings were quite otherwise. The earliest Halloween celebrations were held not by the inspired early church, but by the Druids in honor of Samhain, Lord of the Dead, whose festival fell on November the 1st. From Halloween through the 20th century by Ralph Linton, page 4. Far from being Christian, this festival is an old pagan holiday masquerading as though it was one of the customs of the church, and yet professing Christians allow their children to get into the spirit of this pagan custom. The Encyclopedia American states about Halloween that it is clearly a relic of the pagan time. Now notice what the authoritative Encyclopedia Britannica says about Halloween. Its long antedates Christianity. The two chief characteristics of the ancient Halloween were the lighting of bonfires and the belief that this is the one night in the year during which ghosts and witches are most likely to wander about. History shows that the main celebrations of the Halloween were purely Druidical from the pagan Druids of Northwest Europe. And this is further proved by the fact that in parts of Ireland, October 31st is still known as Old Shemna, Vigil of Samhain. Samhain, or Samhain, was the pagan lord of the dead among the Druids. So Halloween was celebrated among the pagans long before Yahshua was born in Bethlehem. This pagan holiday, however, was not celebrated alone among the Druids. It was also a Roman festival, The Britannica continues, on the Druidic ceremonies were grafted some of the characteristics of the Roman festival in honor of the Pomona, held about November the 1st, in which nuts and apples representing the winter store of fruits played an important part. Notice the widespread pagan customs to celebrate this season of the year. Why Halloween was celebrated. Now comes the shocking truth from history as to why this holiday was celebrated. Here are the plain facts as written in the Book of Halloween on page 10 by Ruth. It says, Kelly, the pagan druids, priests, taught the immortality of the soul, that it passed from one body to another at death. They believed that on the last night of the old year, October the 31st, the Lord of Death gathered together the souls of all those who had died in the passing year and had been condemned to live in the bodies of animals to decree what forms they should inhabit. For the next 12 months, he could be coaxed to give a lighter sentence by girls and prayers. On the new year, their sins being expiated, they were released to go to the Druid heaven from Halloween through 20th century, page 5. Halloween was celebrated to preserve in the minds of the people the false doctrine of the immortality of the soul, that the dead are not really dead. Almost all heathen nations had days in honor of the dead, days originally instituted to commemorate the death of Nimrod, Genesis 10, 8-10, whom Semiramis' wife said was still alive. Now, let us understand the meaning of the word Halloween. It is the eve of All Hallows, or Hallowmas, or All Saints' Day, and as such it is one of the most solemn festivals of the Catholic Church. From page 3 of the Lenten's Halloween to the 20th century, Halloween is the evening of All Hallows, or All Saints' Day, which falls on November the 1st. Since in ancient times the days were customarily reckoned as being at a sunset, however, for Halloween was merely the evening celebration, the anticipation of the great day of the November 1, dedicated to the Lord of the Dead. This brings the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us, number 11. Click on our audio archives to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. What a friend we have in Yahshua.
What a friend we have in Yahshua. All our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to Yah in prayer. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to Yah in prayer. Every trials and temptation, is there trouble anywhere? We should never be discouraged. Take it to the Yah in prayer. Can we find a friend so faithful who will all our sorrows share? Yahshua knows our every weakness. Take it to the Yah in prayer. Oh, we
and heavy laden, cumbered with the load of care. Precious Savior, still a refuge, take it to the young friend. Through the friendly skies forsake me, take it to the yawning friend. In his arms he'll take and shield thee, thou wilt find a solace there.